Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
What's going to become of you? It's up to you to decide. If you stay in this town, you are lost.
Where would I go? Paris? I got $4.
That's what makes me mad with you. You're a coward. I mean it. You let life defeat you. You don't fight back.
What chance has a woman got?
More chance than men. A woman, young, beautiful like you, can get anything she wants in the world because you have power over men. But you must use men, not let them use you. You must be a master, not a slave. Look, here. Nietzsche says, all life, no matter how we idealize it, is nothing more nor less than exploitation. That's what I'm telling you. Exploit yourself. Go to some big city where you will find opportunities. Use men. Be strong, defiant. Use men to get the things you want.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan.
And I'm Tim.
So welcome to 15 Minute Film Fanatics, the podcast where two lifelong friends and film fans watch movies separately and talk about them on the show for the first time. Today, we're excited because we're doing Babyface, the 1933 film with Barbara Stanwyck, everybody knows, directed by Alfred E. Green, famous for being pre-code, famous also because Daryl Zanuck took a $1 payment for the story idea, gave it to Gene Markey and Catherine Scola to write the screenplay of. Everybody loves this movie. Tim and I love it. We've never talked about it, though. So in part one, we talk about our overall take on the movie. We just rewatched it for the pod. Tim, go.
Well, I was hesitant when you mentioned Babyface because my first thought was, what is there to say about Babyface? It's so direct, and it is this sort of thing. Like, it's against interpretation, like Susan Sontag would have said. Like, as everybody knows about this, the one thing that's most famous about this movie is as Barbara Stanwyck scores with bigger and bigger executives, you see the outside of the big building in New York City that cranes upward to each new floor as she gets higher and higher in the building. It's that kind of movie. You couldn't even say, hey, you know, it's got great things to say about feminist empowerment because it's so there. It's not like you're finding some new meaning that wasn't there to begin with. Every man's a chump. Even George Brent really is a chump. Everybody except the professor, who is, you know, an older man, thus by Hollywood standards is a sexless figure. It works like gangbusters, and it is, sort of essential to the Barbara Stanwyck ethos and the way, you know, she will become famous later on for going gooey over Gary Cooper or Henry Fonda. She's this, you know, her most famous role is Double Indemnity, where she admits at the end, like, I was never any good. But generally, she starts out as this predatory person who then falls for the chump.
Right.
And so, you know, that's sort of what we're seeing the beginning of here.
part of this makes me, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about Double Indemnity. You know, Lily Powers and Babyface, she almost makes Phyllis Dietrichson look like, you know, Maria von Trapp or something. I mean, she's rough. I mean, she is to do another one of her movies. She's like Stella Dallas, but without a conscience. Like Stella Dallas is kind of torn. Am I doing the right thing for my daughter? What do? I leave the wedding at the end? But this is just no way. And I think it is interesting to watch in our current like historical moment, right? Because, you know, she is the predator, and that's not to give all the men like a pass on this because they're all horrible. But you know, it's interesting to see her crush out all sentiment, like the old professor says, right? And it's great when he reads her the Nietzsche. I love that. He's like, you know, be strong, defiant, use men to get the thing you want. And you just see her go, yeah. Like she's never had this idea before until this guy tells Nietzsche to her. I mean, everybody in this movie is gross. Everybody. And I use that word deliberately. Everyone's gross. But the thing that's so much fun about it is that she's Richard III.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. No, there's nothing but victims on the stage at the end. Yeah.
Nothing but victims. And what's great about it is that she's also like Richard III because she tells us what she's going to do. Yeah. And then we watch her do it. Like there's no suspense in like how it's going to end up. And right from the beginning, when she goes, I love when she goes to see Mr. Pratt, the fat guy who works in the hiring office. And, you know, where are you from? Are you from the South? I'm from Tallapoosa, Georgia. And like, he's like the Duke of Clarence. Like he's got chump written all over him. And it's so enjoyable to watch her do that.
Where did they find that guy, Mr. Pratt? He's not like a Hollywood type. He actually looks like a real person.
But it's funny, like we see her go through the whole thing. Like, I love when she breaks the bottle on the guy's face and like, you're totally there with her. Like, yeah. And like her father dies in his satanic mill, his, you know, he dies trying to repair his still. And you're like, yeah, that's it. Break free. And as she keeps going, like you're totally drawn into her side and you don't even question what she's doing because you just want her to get even with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the movie makes it easy.
It's great.
And you know, her apartment gets better and better. Her clothes are fantastic. Right.
Totally. I mean, the costumes in this are great. And to the point where like, when she's the kept woman, and of course, like, you know, if you're rich enough to do that, you have to have your own smoking jacket. like you said before, it's so direct. Like we're going to show how she goes up with her clothes by what she eats, right? When Chico says, that food looks good. She's like, well, you ate yesterday.
Yeah.
But then it gets to like, she's at like the equivalent of a stork club or whatever it is. And it's also, remember this too, it's like the movie's 70 minutes long or 75 minutes long. I mean, there's not even the parts of Richard III, like when the three ghosts come in and it slows everything up before the end. Like there's none of that.
Hi, we're back for part two, where we talk about a key moment in the movie. Dan, what's yours?
My moment is when, I mean, you could almost like stop the streaming service at random and you'll find a great one. But mine is when she's reading the etiquette book and she has the giant Emily Post etiquette book. And I love that because it shows you like that the movie's assumption is that class is something you can learn if you're a good enough actor and you could just pull it off. So like we kind of think in America that like some people just have it, like, you know, Cary Grant just walked around being Cary Grant all day. And like people now that like have this kind of way about them, like including of course, Barbara Stanwyck.
Right.
You can't, right. But of course, like the movie, the premise of the movie is that you just learn your lines and you just say all the right things. Like you call the guy, no, did Fuzzy Wuzzy enjoy his dinner? Like, and you know exactly what to say. And it's not like family history or like a legacy of all these things or like, you know, this is how the Stanwycks behave.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You just learn your lines and do the thing and everyone will believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's even when Crocodile Dundee is the real thing, but he's shaving with a regular razor, but then he sees Linda Kozlowski watching him and he pulls out his Bowie knife. That's what he needs to shave, right?
What's your moment?
Yeah. I mean, this movie is nothing but great scenes, as you said. I like it starts out in Erie, Pennsylvania, and it starts out with these obvious stock shots of Erie. And in a weird way, I mean, this is one of these economical early talkies where there's train. She runs away on a train. She lives in Erie, Pennsylvania. You see a little of the exterior of their house a little bit, but it's all very compact. This director of this movie, I've never heard of him before, Alfred E. Green. I figured he must be a thinking man's Alfred E. Newman. But this is his 54th movie. This is one of these guys who had been at it through the silent period. He started, I think, before the 20s, he directed his first movie. And so all this stuff you're seeing, like the camera craning up and all of that stuff, I'm very wary these days of saying anybody did something for the first time, because almost always you find out, somebody did that back in the silent era. But, and you know, this is one of those guys who did that. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people like that, filmmakers who are really, you know, they may have been better than Orson Welles for all we know, but all their stuff happened in silent era. So they're always going to be downgraded a little bit. I'm a big fan of Frank Borzage, who made a lot of very good sound and color movies, but his real masterpieces are in the sound era or in the silent era. So he's always going to be, you know, below John Ford and William Wellman and so forth.
Yeah, what's interesting is that, you know, guys like Alfred E. Green, and you said, like, they were making movies before the invention of films.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why most of their stuff hasn't survived. First of all, because it was like highly explosive, so they had to be careful about it. And also, you know, nobody thought about preserving that stuff. In fact, I mean, one of the things that did in the silent era, I don't mean to get off on my silent movie kick, but the studios actually made an effort to like destroy negatives and things like that and make silent movies unavailable because they wanted to force the exhibitors to upgrade their equipment.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where, and he continued to make a bunch of movies. He has a biopic of Benjamin Disraeli and a bunch of other stuff. So I'm going to think might be looking more deeply into Alfred Green.
That'll be a good double hit. You could listen to Disraeli Gears by Cream and then watch the movie. So welcome back to part three. We always talk about the title or the ending or the big takeaways. So Tim, you could start us off wherever you want.
Well, the ending, it certainly ends in a big way. George Brent shoots himself in the stomach. I believe Hideki Tojo did the same thing after Japan's surrender. Unusual place to shoot yourself. It doesn't kill him. He seems to be alive at the end. He's recovering. It's like almost all that heaven allows at the end.
Right.
The guy is still alive, but you're not sure whether he's going to, you know, make full recovery.
And this is after, of course, the father-son death that happens that causes the whole scandal in the middle, which the first time you see the movie, you're like, holy cow, this movie's been on for like 25 minutes and you already have like the son kill the father and then commit suicide in the love nest.
I know. And you're thinking at that point, how's Lily going to get out of this, right?
Yeah, like what else can happen in this movie, right?
It turns out she can turn on the waterworks for a whole boardroom full of men and they'll all go for it.
Well, it's the tagline, as you remember from the poster, was she had it and she made it pay. So anyway, go back to the ambulance. What do you make of that?
You know, I think you'll find a lot of argument in the cineastic community. Even among people who like this movie, you'll say this ending is a total Hollywood cop-out.
Total cop-out.
You know, she never should have fallen for him. Maybe so. Like I said, Barbara Stanwyck went on to make a career out of that type of role. And she still manages to sell it, right? And you feel it yourself when you see her, when she's given somebody the eyeball, you feel like, yeah, if she did that to me, I would go for it too. And it's interesting, the movie's called Babyface because, you know, Barbara Stanwyck has not have a baby face.
No, she does not.
Otto Preminger's Angel Face is a little more realistically titled because Gene Simmons has a sort of unearthly beauty to her. You know, Barbara Stanwyck has a, you know, somewhat hard features, and that's part of her appeal, but it's not a baby face in any way, and she lives that part.
Well, it's funny that the uncensored one, which we all love now, right? Like the one where she's in the ambulance, that wasn't available. That was lost until 2004. And that the original the original one, they wanted to have Lily lose everything and return to Erie, Pennsylvania, right? And like, you know, go back to her regular old, you know, boring lifestyle. And imagine what that was like. I mean, the ending is, you seem to be defending the ending. I think the ending is kind of a cop-out, but what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, Richard III, whether he died historically or not, has to die.
Yeah.
On Bosworth Field. What's, like, it's got to happen.
What's funny, when I first saw this, I had heard this thing, like, you know, it's restored the original ending and so forth. And then it's the Hayes office had cut it to pieces, and this is the restored version, was the shorthand. And then when I see it, I see the end. Well, wait, she turns around and turns out to be, you know, she falls for him and does the right thing and realizes riches don't matter. I feel like, well, isn't that the ending that the Hayes Code insisted on? I don't get it. Like, it actually would have been more ethically together if she had, you know, gone back to Erie, Pennsylvania with nothing, right? Right.
I guess she's reward. I guess the danger, quote unquote, in air quotes, was that she was rewarded for her like her life of vice by having like Mr. Wonderful, who shoots himself in the stomach so he can live through the movie, and to actually say, you know, when he says, "I need that $400,000," and at first she's like, "You're not getting my jewels. You're not getting those things." So I think that's it. You're right. But I thought to myself, well, that's a moral tale too, right? Where she realizes, "I'll give him the money," but she still ends up with she still wins at the end.
Yeah. That's a great scene, by the way, because. You know, George Brent, he sort of looks like a chump. He looks like a mug in his way. And as he's telling her the scene, like, it doesn't even occur to him. Like, I'm going to need $1 million to defend myself. I'll need you to do this, that, and the other. But, yeah. You know, of course, you're like, yeah, that ain't never happening. But he really believes it. He's in love.
Yeah, babyface. She wouldn't give the time of day to John Wayne.
Yeah, well, we should mention, by the way, this is when I like to, you know, sort of set people back, I tell them the best John Wayne movie of the 30s is Babyface. Oh, he is. And he's great. By the way, you said they're all the guys are bad. He's OK. He didn't do anything wrong, as far as I know.
Well, she won't talk to him.
That's
because he's useless. He's useless. Right, There's no reason. He's
outlived his purpose. He's a completely transactional person.
Thanks for listening to our episode on Babyface. You could follow us on X at 15MIN Film. You could also follow us on Letterboxd. Let us know what to watch next. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.